what I need here. There was a time last week when someone asked me on the program about getting help for those who cannot sleep. Dr. Maggie McGurgan is the woman. Dr. McGurgan, good morning.
Good morning.
I can't remember the name of the gentleman who contacted us last week, but he did ask us to get someone on who could tell us about insomnia. And I suggested to him that he didn't eat going to bed, was one of the things that I said. And what was the other thing? Oh, I can't remember what my other piece of sound advice would have been. But I no longer have to bark, as I have a dog myself. The doctor is here. What is your advice to insomniacs?
Okay, well, I mean, I suppose it's a little bit different for everyone, depending on the exact difficulties they have with sleep. The first thing to say is that sleep difficulties are very common. And unfortunately, we really don't give it the priority or the prominence that we probably should in terms of the potential impacts on both our mental and our physical health. It can be very helpful to remember that we need to have a routine every night, where possible, trying to settle to bed around about the same time most evenings and rise around the same time most mornings is very useful. Trying to keep the bedroom just for sleep, where possible. Have a nice relaxing wind down routine for around 45 minutes to an hour before your desired sleep onset time. And very importantly, no use of mobile phones or handheld devices in the bedroom, and no TV in the bedroom.
So that certainly helps. You're painting my bedroom here, if you don't mind me saying, and the whole routine. I just love the joy I get from sleeping. I would say I've only lost a night's sleep once or twice in my lifetime. I'm such a brilliant sleeper, and I know how many hours that I need. I'm an 8 hour a night man. Any more than that, I've slept too much. Much less than that, and I've got a problem. So am I blessed, or am I in the majority?
Well, on average, most of us need around 8 hours. Sadly, an awful lot of us function on much less. As we get older, we potentially need a little bit less, perhaps closer to 7. Younger adults probably need a little bit closer to 9. We know our teenagers need more than we expect, probably closer to 9 to 10 hours. And obviously for children, it's more than that again. An awful lot of people will at least have short-term difficulties with sleep for either a medical reason, perhaps an emotional reason, stress or something else, or some physical health disorder at some point in their lives.
So you've got a situation where an individual can't get to sleep for a few nights. Say it's getting into his mind or her mind, and you are a psychiatrist, so it's the mind that you will fully understand. Is giving advice like don't go to bed on a full stomach, don't have a light on in the room, don't go to bed if you've had an argument with someone because you're going to be hyper, is the like of that relevant?
It's very relevant. Your emotional state and the sort of pattern you're settling yourself into and moving towards sleep is very important in timing of sleep onset. So if you can have a wind down period, no exposure to your mobile phone or any other blue wavelength light device for around 45 minutes to an hour, settling in a room with no TV that's ideally got no light or very dim low-level lighting will all be very helpful. In terms of eating and drinking, yes, a light meal, perhaps a milky drink, can be helpful, nothing too heavy, and no exercise very late in the evening. Some vigorous exercise for 15 to 30 minutes earlier in the day will obviously be very helpful.
And finally, the most personal question of all, Doctor, when it comes to a relationship that you're in, is interaction between the two people in the bed beneficial for sleep, or is it something that will make it even more difficult to get to sleep?
Well, I think anybody that's in a relationship will know that the aftermath of those activities tend to be very helpful for sleep.
So it gets you over, is that right?
Yeah.
All right, it's highly recommended. Listen, get at it, it's highly recommended. Someone's asking about sleep paralysis, what's that?
I'm probably not the most qualified person to speak about sleep paralysis. That would tend to come under sleep physicians or neurologists. It's a situation where you wake from sleep and you have no ability to make any movement within your body. It's a very frightening experience. Not particularly uncommon. Some people will experience it once in their lifetime for a very short period of time. For other people, it's a more chronic and difficult condition.
Yeah, it's a very worrying and concerning feeling that, I would imagine. And there's also, maybe this isn't your field either, where people hold their breath, looks like as if they've passed out, but they haven't. And then they breathe again some minutes later, says Debbie, listening to the programme. There's a word for that, isn't there?
An apneic episode. Yes, where the person either is withholding their breath or feels unable to breathe for a short period of time. Again, can be quite common in younger children and will often pass as they get older. Again, I wouldn't be the most appropriate expert to discuss on that.
But Dr. Maggie, you've been very helpful in relation to the original inquiry about people being properly prepared, relaxing and trying to get a good night's sleep. We can't take it for granted, the joy of a good night's sleep. Some people rarely experience it. Great speaking to you, and every continued success at the Royal College of Psychiatrists. Really appreciate you coming on, Maggie. Thank you.